Case number 225091, Bluegrass Materials Company versus Frank Freeman et al. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Oakley, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brad Oakley on behalf of the appellant, Bluegrass Materials. I would like to reserve, and please the court, 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Your Honors, this case is about the appellees as leasee, as lessee of an oil and gas lease, unreasonably using their lease that's only producing de minimis royalties to block the expansion of a productive quarry that's owned by my client. It's before the court on the district court's dismissal by summary judgment of Bluegrass's claim for termination of the lease, and so we're on de novo review. The district court's decision must be reversed because it fundamentally misapplied Kentucky law with respect to termination of leases. The district court applied the law of forfeiture to Bluegrass's claims, but that was not the claim that Bluegrass pled. Bluegrass pled and proved that the lease terminated according to its own terms. And that fundamental misapplication of Kentucky law had a domino effect of errors that led to the district court granting the appellee's summary judgment motion. In Kentucky, there are three distinct grounds for termination of leases, and that's forfeiture and abandonment and termination according to its own terms. And the reason that highlighting that is important because it is three distinct. That is the language that the court, Kentucky court in High Rock used, three distinct. Bluegrass did not plead a claim for forfeiture or abandonment. They pled a claim for termination of the lease under the third grounds, which is termination according to its own terms pursuant to its addendum clause. And what Kentucky law says as far as termination according to the addendum clause is that when the primary term of the lease is run, which is what we had here, this lease had a primary term of 1 year, and the lease provides for extension so long as oil or gas is produced in paying quantities, the lease will ipso facto, by the very nature of the situation, terminate whenever production or development ceases for an unreasonable period of time. So essentially what Kentucky law says, which has been recognized by this court in the Acres of Land decision, is that the lease terminates when it's in its secondary term if it's not producing in paying quantities automatically.
What's the period of time that you're saying that the defendants weren't producing oil? What's the period of time?
We believe it goes all the way back to 2015, which was the 4 years leading up to when Bluegrass filed this lawsuit.
So from 2015 to the time the lawsuit was filed?
2018, okay. Yes, Your Honor. The district court actually cited High Rock, which is the case that says there's three different ways a lease can terminate. But then he failed to properly apply that law. The district court said that he thought that Kentucky courts had been imprecise in distinguishing between forfeiture and abandonment reasons for termination, and then concluded that Bluegrass had pled a claim for forfeiture because our case was based on an implied or expressed covenant in the lease. And that's just fundamentally wrong. He failed to recognize the third reason that a lease can terminate. The lease here includes an express addendum clause. And even if that could be construed as implied, as far as the addendum clause requiring paying quantities, Kentucky law has said that there's a third way. That's not forfeiture. There's a third way when you're talking about the addendum clause. And again, I'll back up a little bit. Forfeiture involves almost like a breach of contract action when the lessee is not complying with an express or implied covenant of the lease. Now, that is somewhat confusing to some degree because you could say that the addendum clause is an express term of the lease, but that doesn't matter here because the Kentucky courts, and again this court in Acres of Land, have recognized the third distinct ground for addendum clauses in the secondary term when the lease terminates according to its own terms. The district court's application of forfeiture law, as I said earlier, had a domino effect. A forfeiture claim requires notice of an increase in production before a lessor can seek termination of the lease. there's no dispute that Bluegrass did not send a notice of increase of production to the lessees in this case before it filed the lawsuit.
Would you, maybe you're going to discuss this later, but are you going to address this issue of partial termination and the extent to which that was properly before the district court and should have been considered, and whether something that we should consider on appeal?
I do think you should consider it on appeal, and I was going to address that.
Okay, later, well, you can, if you want to.
I will go ahead and we can address it now since we brought it up. I think, Your Honor, that claim of partial termination, it wasn't considered by the district court at all. That is sort of part and parcel with our claims for waste and breach of the good faith duty of fair dealing. And there's no question that Kentucky law allows partial termination of a lease. And what that gets back to is the duty of the appellees, the operators in this case, to act as reasonably prudent operators. And we had evidence, there was abundance of evidence before the district court that they had not been acting as reasonably prudent operators by applying for permits to drill additional wells. They had not done any due diligence. They'd done no geologic studies. They weren't using any current industry methods for locating these wells. They were conveniently located right where Bluegrass wanted to expand the quarry. And so the district court essentially, I think the way I read his decision on dismissing our waste and breach of the good faith and fair duty claim is that the lease provided that they could drill oil, so therefore it can't be waste or breach of the good faith fair duty of good faith and fair dealing implied in every contract. The district court did not recognize that there is an element of reasonableness in those claims. They have to act as reasonably prudent operators. There's Kentucky statutes that says that oil and gas operators can't use any more of the surface than reasonably necessary to conduct their operations, and that's what we're saying. It was unreasonable for the appellees to continue to try to produce from these unproductive wells that already existed, and then also to keep applying more wells when there was no reasonable basis for doing so. They had done no studies. They didn't become more interested in drilling more wells until they figured out that Bluegrass had intentions to expand the quarry. And that was our claim and our evidence for breach of the good faith duty and fair dealing and waste, and that's what was sort of the underpinning for our argument that the lease should, at a minimum, is an alternative claim, alternative to complete termination. It should be partially terminated where they're limited to the wells that they do have now, and then they can produce no further.
Counsel, would you concede that there's an issue of fact as to whether the whales are producing sufficiently to for the continuation of the lease? I guess the language is whether the production is in paying quantities, that there's a factual dispute as to that?
Your Honor, I would not concede that. I would concede that there is at least a factual dispute, but I believe the facts that were before the district court showed that there's no way a reasonable jury could possibly conclude that the royalties, the minimum royalties that Bluegrass was receiving, could possibly justify their continued occupancy and burden on this land, on Bluegrass's land. The amount of royalties that they were producing compared to what and how productive the property could be if Bluegrass can quarry this property, it's not even close. Going back from 2010 when Bluegrass bought this property until 2019, they had paid less than $15,000 in royalties over 9 years. And that had, and this goes to the question that Judge Mathis raised, from 2015 to 2018, they had, on average, produced a third of a barrel of oil per day. And there are cases going back, and not all of these are are cases that involve termination pursuant to a habendum clause. Some of these are abandonment cases.
Let me ask you this. If the lease does not define what constitutes paying quantities, why would that not be an issue for the fact finder?
Well, I think that's because there's cases that we've cited in our brief that say 2.5 years of cessation of production is not sufficient to continue a lease. 18 months is sufficient to be abandonment. And there's another case that talks about the Monarch case. 1 year of no royalties is sufficient. There's a case, Delta Gas, that's before this circuit. 2 years of failure production was insufficient to continue the lease. Now, not to say that there's a bright line law. It's going to depend on the facts and circumstances of every case. But here, where there's millions of tons of aggregate reserves available and there, compared to bare minimum royalties that are being paid, and oil is quite speculative, migratory. It may be there one day, the next day it's not. There's no real comparison here. There's no factual dispute, and no reasonable jury could possibly find that the minimum royalties that are being paid justifies their continued occupancy of the land. But again, at a minimum, there would be a factual dispute. I believe I've addressed waste and the partial termination. I think the point that I want to make here is that this is all speculation as far as what their intentions to continue to try to operate on this property. There's a strong public policy in Kentucky against holding property for a long period of time based on speculation. And I think at a minimum here, this case should be remanded because the district court failed to consider the proper law. But here we've got a case where, and this is the acres of land case, in that case there was no evidence that the royalties were too small to justify their occupancy of the land. And this is the case where there is evidence that their royalties are too small.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Oakley. Mr. Meredith.
Please, court. Mr. Oakley. I'm here today representing the Freeman family, who has developed this lease and been operating it for 37 years. I've been privileged enough to argue cases for 46 years in various courts, mostly in oil and gas cases, and this is one of the few times that I can remember ever an operator doing exactly what they promised the landowner they would do in 1985 when they took the lease. Black Gold Oil Company promised Miss Manning that within a year they would start producing oil, and they have, each and every year, including up through this year, as we're before the court today. They sold oil not too long ago. You know, and this lease is not anything different. A Kentucky Standard 88 producing lease has been around over 100 years, and the terms are real simple. The landowner identifies the term, which in this case was a year, and then they identify what they want in return for giving the write-up to go on the surface and drill for oil or gas. In her case, if you produced oil on any part of her 100-acre property, you were to pay me 12.5% for whatever you sold it for, which is what they have done. And she was satisfied until the day she died in 2001 with the royalty checks that she got each and every year to supplement her Social Security. Now, her children continued to receive those checks until 2006 when they sold it to Hydro Conduit. And Hydro Conduit did a title search before they bought this property because she owned this and another 118 acres.
Counsel, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I know that the district court granted summary judgment based on forfeiture.
Yes.
Do you acknowledge that the plaintiffs weren't making a forfeiture claim in their complaint?
I don't know really what the plaintiffs were making because their complaint didn't say anything other than they wanted a declaration of rights to terminate the lease. So the judge says, okay, when I get to summary judgment stage, which took another 3 years, the judge looked at Kentucky law and says, okay, there's three ways that you can forfeit a lease. Kentucky law doesn't favor forfeitures of oil and gas leases, so he had to go through the entire gamut. Is it forfeiture?
No, because there wasn't any notice given, which Mr. Oakley has acknowledged there was no notice given, to increase production for the alleged breach of implied covenant that you're not making enough paying quantities. There was an abandonment because my clients were on the property each and every month of each and every year operating these wells. So therefore, we got to, okay, what's the third term that you can do? Okay, you can have an ipso facto termination of lease by its own terms. So when this court is looking at this case, what terms have my clients not fulfilled? Nothing. They have done what they said they were going to do. They have produced oil each and every year. They have sent 43 checks that were cashed by Bluegrass Materials. Now, let's not forget about the fact Bluegrass Materials didn't buy this property because they were relying upon any future oil royalties from it. But interestingly enough, 2 months after they got their deed, after paying $575,000 for 218 acres of surface land, and they noticed that the deed said, by the way, it's subject to the terms of this 1985 oil and gas lease, they sent off to the purchaser of the oil, Barrett Oil Purchasing, says, here's our deed. We now on the surface. You start sending us what you used to send to Hydro Conduit, the 12.5% royalty check. They did that for 3 years. And then the same person on behalf of Bluegrass Materials Company sends another division order, says, okay, we want you now to start sending the royalties to a Jacksonville, Florida office as opposed to a Knoxville, Tennessee office. And those continued for 43 checks. Now, you asked Mr. Oakley, what year did the lease terminate by its own terms? And he said, starting in 2015. One of the exhibits that we filed that Judge Stivers had an opportunity to review that's undisputed, there was 12 loads of oil sold starting in 2015 through the end of 2018 when they filed this suit. And they cashed every one of those checks. And then they cashed four more checks in 2019 after the suit was filed before they realized, wait a second, we probably need to quit cashing these checks if we're trying to terminate this lease. So therefore, when Judge Stivers got to it, he looked at, has it expired by its own terms? And what I have cited to this court is the very case that they say gives them the right to terminate this lease, satisfying its own terms. And let me turn to it to make sure I'm giving the right one, because I only cited 60-something cases in this matter. They cited the Wheeler versus LeMaster Oil and Gas versus Henley case, which was a Kentucky 1965 case. That was one of the first cases that gave an opportunity to a landowner to terminate under the own terms of the lease. But that standard was for an operator who had unreasonably quit operating the lease for a sufficient period of time. That hasn't happened here. We've got 12 loads of oil sold beginning in 2015. We've got 43 loads of oil sold from the time they bought the property until the time they filed the suit. So that my clients have never abandoned this property or not been unreasonable in producing oil. Now, there's a dichotomy that Mr. Oakley doesn't want to describe and hasn't described in his brief. There's a distinction between producing oil and selling oil. If you look at the terms of the Hetty Manning lease, the only requirement that my clients had to do was produce oil. Well, it takes time to get the oil out of the ground, put it in the tank, and get it ready to sell. So the fact that Mr. Oakley has raised that, okay, between September of 2015 and September of 2016, there was only one load of oil sold of approximately 40 barrels. Well, that could be true, but that doesn't mean that my clients didn't satisfy the terms of the lease. But more importantly, that can't be deemed and was not deemed by Judge Stivers as a matter of law to be an unreasonable length of time not to produce oil, because he clearly found that oil was in fact sold. It might not have been the quantity that now in hindsight they say is 2020, that they don't think that's enough to hold their lease, but just, they don't want any oil produced on this property. They don't want any wells drilled. They don't want anything but the Freemans to go away. This is the biggest case of corporate greed I've ever come across in oil and gas case in my life. They have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to terminate a lease that is clearly in full force and effect, because they know at some point in time they're eventually going to get permits to come on my client's oil and gas lease, blow it up to get their limestone aggregate out, and they don't want to be the defendant in another lawsuit having to pay damages for the loss of that oil revenue. That's what this is all about.
Mr. Speed, the amount that opposing counsel stated about the amount of royalties paid to Bluegrass from 2010 until, I think, 2018 or 2019?
When they filed the suit, I counted it up exactly. It's $14,833. Every one of the checks was they cashed and put in their bank. And when they first started this lawsuit, Your Honor, when we took the deposition, they wouldn't even admit whether they had cashed the checks or not. And if you look at their complaint, two of their paragraphs under count one for termination says they dispute whether they got any payments of royalties. They wanted the court to believe that they hadn't been paid for 8 years. But when it finally came time and my clients were able to find every one of the 43 checks with their signature in a bank account, well, then all of a sudden they went to, okay, you've got us there, so now we're down to termination by its own terms because in our minds, it's not enough.
If we're looking at it as a case of termination by its own terms, what impact does Bluegrass cashing those checks have on that analysis?
The judge said it exactly. It's a waiver. Every one of those checks were cashed knowing full well that that's what they were for. If they ever wanted any more money than what they were cashing those checks for, they would have put them on notice. They didn't. They couldn't cash them and then turn their back and say, well, we're still going to try to terminate your lease by its own terms because you are keeping us from what we eventually want to do. We aren't keeping them from doing anything. They've come on this property every time they've wanted to. They just haven't got a permit yet to come over and blow it up and have to pay us for it. So this is what they're doing. They're saying, okay, we're going to terminate your lease. We're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and make you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend it in this very courtroom. Judge Stivers got it correctly right. He looked at it for what it was. It is a contract. The Freedmans have abided by their terms of the contract. If you wanted to make them develop it more, you should have put them on notice to see how much more they could have developed. They've even objected to the applications for permits that my clients have filed after the suit got filed. It's up to the Department of Mines and Minerals for the state of Kentucky to determine whether a permit is good or not. It's not up to them. There's no provision in this lease that gives them any right to say where a location can be drilled, except it can't be drilled closer than 200 feet to an existing structure or a bar. So, in addition, this wasn't simply a case of termination of lease. They said, we'll tack on whatever other issue we can come up with. So they go to trespass. The judge says, well, I looked at the trespass statute. They have a contract to be on that property. There's nothing they're doing that's not within their contract. There's no trespass. Then they say, okay, then it's waste. Well, we haven't done anything that's been wasteful to this property. They're still producing oil, bringing them out of the ground from the two well locations they are. They haven't drilled any other locations yet, so they haven't wasted anything. And there's an exception to the waste statute if you have an oil and gas lease that they kind of ignored in their brief and even in the reply brief. And there certainly hasn't been an implied covenant of fair dealing not met. The judge clearly said, look, you can't ignore the fact that they've got rights under that lease to go in there and apply for a permit to drill a new well or continue to operate an existing well. That's what their lease lets them do. And your honors, they bought this property in 2010 knowing that the terms of that oil and gas lease was clearly in their deed. And you know, I found the interesting thing, your honors, when they filed a bunch of exhibits to this complaint. When they filed their exhibit for the deed, they didn't put the exhibit B that indicated it was subject to the terms of the Hetty Mantle oil and gas lease and the assignments to my clients. They conveniently left that out as if it didn't exist, knowing full well that it did, and their actions have always been that it did. They applied for two different division orders. They cashed 43 different checks. But the most glaring thing is they had a representative from Bluegrass Materials get up before the Warren County Board of Adjustments in January of 2017 and acknowledge under oath that the Freemans had an existing oil and gas lease and that they would cooperate with them and make sure that they didn't damage their oil and gas production while they attempted to get a conditional use permit to eventually move on this property and start blowing it up for limestone aggregate mining. But yet, here they are 11 months later in federal court filing a lawsuit saying, oh, your lease terminated as of 2015.
Let me ask you one question about the Freemans had offered this expert testimony from Karen Greenwell.
Yes.
Am I correct about that? Which goes to whether the lease was producing oil in paying quantities under this secondary
yes.
term. There was a motion filed to exclude that testimony. Do you know if the court ever ruled on that?
They ruled it as moot because they had done away with the complaint that had every cause of action in it filed by the plaintiffs, so they didn't have to address that. And that's the very definition of moot. There's no justiciable controversy left to rule on, so therefore we don't need to consider whether her testimony under Daubert or 702 was or wasn't necessary.
Okay. So you, Freedoms would not rely upon her testimony at this point.
Well, I don't think there's anything to send back, but obviously that would if something ever did get sent back that went to anything other than the leasehold validity issue, I don't think you need to rule on it.
Okay.
I just ask that you affirm this decision. It's a well-written decision by Judge Stivers. He pondered over this for well over a year after his under submission, and it's time to put this thing to bed.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, there's quite a few points there that are nowhere in the record, and I would ask that you ignore any of those arguments from Mr. Meredith.
Well, what do you claim that he said that's not in the record?
Well, a lot of the things about what his clients have done and what my client have done are not in the record.
Well, wasn't that before, you're saying none of that was before the court at the time of the court ruling on the dispositive motion?
I'm sorry, the court didn't rely on any of that to rule on the motion for summary judgment, and so it's not before this court.
I guess the question is, what do you mean by that?
Well, there was just some superfluous statements made by counsel that just colloquially that I don't think are in the record, and that's
okay. But you're talking generally, so I don't know what statements you're referring to that counsel made that you claim, you know, are not before us or were not in the record from the court below. You just say, unless you're saying that you're asking us to ignore his entire argument, maybe.
No.
But you're not saying what facts that he stated that you're taking issue with.
Just the things that you're saying is coming in and blowing up our property. This property is owned by Bluegrass. Bluegrass still owns the mineral rights. The mineral rights haven't been severed. This is not their property. This is Bluegrass's property, and it has the right to do on its property as it wishes, as long as it doesn't unreasonably interfere with their property or their leasehold.
Well, the issue's what's subject to the lease, even if you not who owns the property. We know who owns the property.
Well, correct, Your Honor, but when Mr. Meredith talks about buying the property subject to the lease, that doesn't mean you can never challenge the validity of the lease. That's what he's suggesting. And that's the argument he made before the district court, that we took subject to this lease. Well, Your Honor, yes, we knew that there was an oil and gas lease on the property when we bought it, but that there's no, and they haven't cited any case law in their brief, didn't cite any case law in their briefs before the district court. That means that you're precluded from ever arguing into the future that the lease had terminated. I mean, that's my point.
And what about the Greenwell expert testimony, just moot at this point in your view, you're not challenging that determination?
Mr. Meredith's correct. The judge never reached the merits of that motion, and we think it should be remanded. It should be reached because her arguments are nothing more than legal conclusions. She's a lawyer. She doesn't have any experience operating an oil and gas lease. All she did was recite the law, and that's what our motion to exclude her testimony was focused on.
So the court did not rule on the motion to exclude?
Well, it ruled on it in the sense that it denied it because it was moot because he had decided the other issues.
Okay.
It did not rule on the merits of the actual motion, whether her testimony should be excluded. A couple other points.
Why don't you take another minute?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I think we need to address the royalties that have been paid. It is true. We accepted royalties. We returned those royalties. But the cases that Judge Stivers used to rely on to say that's waiver Those are all forfeiture cases. We didn't plead a claim for forfeiture. There are cases, and again, this goes back to the acres of land case and the Cumberland contracting case in Kentucky State Court. Those cases talked about in Cumberland, the lessor had accepted royalties for 23 months before filing the lawsuit, and the court didn't dismiss it because that constituted a waiver. In acres of land, this court said there's no proof that the royalties paid were too small to compensate the lessor. So there were royalties paid. The argument there was whether they were too small, and the court said there's no evidence. That's exactly what there is before this court. There's evidence that these royalties were too small to constitute paying quantities. And that leads me to my last point that I make. Mr. Meredith and the district court do not recognize that paying quantities and what that requires. They think that as long as you produce oil, or at least Mr. Meredith is arguing for this court, that as long as you produce oil, that's sufficient. That's not true. That's not consistent with Kentucky case law that we've cited. Kentucky case law says the object of oil and gas leases is to produce a royalty for the lessor. You just can't produce oil, sit on it, never sell it, hold it for speculative reasons. That's clearly contrary to Kentucky law. Thank you.
Okay, counsel, thank you for your arguments this morning. We do appreciate them. The case will be submitted.